Thanks for listening to Schlereth and Evans On Demand. Did you know you can listen to us on Alexa? Enable our skill today, then say, Alexa, play 104.3 The Fan.
Clear the Air with Mark Schlereth is brought to you by Monster Vac.
Are you ready?
Let's clear the air with Mark Schlereth.
It's gone from suck to blow.
What?
You know, so many things going on in the Denver sports scene right now. We just watched the Nuggets, you know, come back in the fourth quarter and do an amazing job. Just two nights ago, we saw the Avalanche absolutely dismantle. What'd you call it? Clown hammering? Is that what you?
Yeah.
Clown hammer. I love that term, by the way. I will steal that. My friend Cecil Lammy calls it a clown hammering when you get beat. And then all of a sudden it's going to be, you know, a guy I know talks about clown hammering. And then I'm just going to say clown hammering. Because that was, I mean, but here's the thing that's interesting to me. Obviously, the Broncos have their, you know, their veteran voluntary, quote unquote, mini camp going on right now. But here's one of the things I want to think about with the Colorado Avalanche is they take on the Calgary Flames tonight, 8:00. You had better, like, this is the game, because you did clown hammer them. This is the game that you better be able to weather the storm in the first period. Because anytime you back a competitor into the corner, that competitor is going to come out swinging. And I expect there to be, like, I'm talking about hitting and just nastiness. Like, this is one of those things they have to respond, because you put that film on, and I've been there, Cecil, when I've played really poorly, and then you walk in, you're like, oh, gosh, I'm going to have to watch this film in front of my peers. Like, the best thing the Calgary Flames could have done is put that film on and made everybody watch it. And just, like, look at how pathetic you guys are. Look at how they just took it to you. Look at how you didn't win the battles in the corner. Look how you let them go stick to stick to stick and score. Like, you guys didn't do anything. So for the Colorado Avalanche, I think the key to the game tonight, weather the first period. If you can get out of the first period tied or just down by one, you got a chance to go up 3-1 in this series. That, to me, is weather the storm, because you're going to walk into a buzzsaw. When it comes to professional athletes and you whip my ass, I guarantee you there's going to be a street fight the next time we play. And that's exactly what they're getting into. And frankly, I think they have what it takes. I think they have the mental makeup, the toughness, the competitiveness to overcome that first period, because you know it's going to be a buzzsaw by Calgary. They're the number one team in this playoffs in the West for a reason. So, me, frankly, I can't wait to see the Avs get their skates on the ice.
That was awesome.
Clear the Air with Mark Schlereth.
Well, isn't that the one thing that we love, even the most casual of hockey fans love about the NHL playoffs, is that intensity ramps up. If Calgary doesn't respond, I'll be shocked.
Yes, I will too. You know, it reminds me of 1998 when the Broncos started the season 13-0. And we're cruising through, and then we go out to a game, and we lose to the Giants. And after we lose to the Giants, then we're going out on a Sunday night or a Monday night, whatever it was, to play the Miami Dolphins.
Mm-hmm.
And we put together this game plan that's just an absolute sabotage game plan. We ran one pass per take. We didn't do anything. I mean, we did absolutely nothing. We had about three plays in our game plan. Here you go. We're not going to show you guys anything. And they clown punched us. Right, they throttled us, man. Miami absolutely throttled us, and it was embarrassing. You had to come back and watch the film, and we just got throttled. And we knew down inside, you can't say anything, but we knew, you know, the coaches were basically saying, hey, we just lost the game, so we're not showing. Like, the Miami Dolphins at that time were a playoff contending team. We may see them in the playoffs, so we're not going to show them anything. We're not. And then we got them in the playoffs. And I'll never forget, we're going, because we've got that bye week, you know, so we're playing the divisional round. So we do what we used to call a 10-10-10 practice.
10-10-10.
10-10-10. Okay. So 10-10-10 is helmets and you know, shorts and T-shirts type of thing, right? And so we're prepping in this 10-10-10. We're basically running plays that we're going to run against the two potential opponents. So we do one period of Miami Dolphins stuff, one period of, I can't remember who the other team was that we had the potential playing, but we went back and forth, but we leaned heavier towards Miami because the coaching staff thought that Miami would win their wild card, you know, their wild card matchup, and that we would get them. So we were probably more like 70-30 Miami versus the other team. So we did all this prep work, and then we ended up getting the Dolphins. And we just destroyed them. If you remember, the game was 38-3. It wasn't. I mean, it was just a thunder punching. You know, right. I mean, it was just like crushing the Miami Dolphins. But that's the kind of effort, you know, that buzzsaw type of effort that I talk about. That's the kind of effort you're going to get from this Calgary Flames team in the first period, because that was an utter embarrassment. Like, if you're a proud franchise and you've been good enough to get the number one seed overall and you got out, like, they had more hits than the Avs in game three. Like, they out-hit the Avs, I think it was 43-36 or something. But the Avs, like, every contested puck in the corner, the Avs got to. Like, everything on the boards, the Avs seemed to get to. They completely outskated them. It was like Calgary was playing, like, on their heels the whole game. And so, it's funny, though, just watching McKinnon skate. Cecil, and you'll appreciate this. There are guys on film that I call them flash players. Like, I'm watching film, I'm like, oh, my God, rewind that. And Nathan McKinnon reminded me of watching Tyreek Hill on tape. Like, Tyreek Hill, it's funny, when I was doing a Baltimore game this year, I'm talking to the defense coordinator of the Baltimore Ravens, Wink Martindale, who used to coach here.
Mm-hmm.
And Wink said, you know, we knew he was fast on film. Like, so we had a plan on film, like, hey, he's really fast. We got it. He goes, but you see him on the field? He goes, he is bar none. Now, Wink's been coaching a long time. The fastest player in pads I have ever seen. Like, it's just, it's like when, you know, when John Madden used to say about Randy Moss, if he's even, he's leaving, you know?
Right.
Right.
He's so fast he can strip paint.
Yeah. But that's Nathan McKinnon on the ice. I mean, just like, yeah, you know, you always kind of fall, for me, I always fall back to a football mentality or things that I've seen in football and relate, you know, locker room situations to what I've seen in football and stuff. And when I watch McKinnon, that's what it reminded me. It reminded me of a guy that's just playing with a different skill set than everybody else.
Yeah, and the other guys know it because the pucker factor is high.
Right.
And I can't believe Mike Evans didn't know what pucker factor was. Did he never compete at anything? Competitive eating, I get it.
Yeah. But. Look at him, though. I mean, a little shaver. It's cute. there is no question. So it'll be interesting to me to see how they respond in this kind of barrage that's going to hit them. And I guarantee you it's going to hit them.
And knowing that it's going to be a street fight.
Right.
How do you respond when you know going in, like, they're going to punch us?
Like, you got to what? We always used to say it about the Raiders because they were so talented. Mike Shanahan used to say it all the time to us. He'd be like, hey, listen, you know, if you're just looking pure talent, they probably are more talented than us, but we're tougher than they are. And he always would be like, just weather the storm. Give them a reason to quit in the first period, in the first quarter, you know. Just weather the storm. And sure enough, man, they come out ready to battle. You'd punch them in the face. You know, you'd stand up to their kind of, they wanted to try to bully you.
Right.
You'd stand up, punch them in the face, and be like, I'll be here all day. And the next thing you know, they'd roll over. And that was the Raiders. My 6 years here, 11-1 against the punk-ass Raiders. There you go, Raider fan.
Nice.
That's for you.
Well, we kind of got an idea yesterday about Vic Fangio's coaching style. Is it more like Mike Shanahan, Josh McDaniels, John Fox, Gary Kubiak? And how does that impact the Denver Broncos? We'll get into that next.
This is Steve.
Hi.
Steve loves manila folders.
It's true.
That's why he started a company supplying manila folders to large corporations.
In both white and eggshell.
What Steve doesn't love is spending time paying suppliers and browsing for loans. Luckily, First Bank offers time-saving treasury management tools and business loans, so you can spend more time with your passion, even if it's manila folders.
In both white and eggshell.
Okay, Steve. First Bank. Business banking for good. Member FDIC. Go to efirstbank.com/business for more details.
It's Schlereth and Evans on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.
Well, it all comes down to coaching style, right? And there is no one better to ask about this, Stink, because when I watched Vic Fangio yesterday, again, one day, mini camp, I get it, but I got a very Shanahan-esque vibe. Not Josh McDaniels. I remember those McDaniels practices. He had everybody busy all the time. But Shanahan was a little bit of a slower pace and more teachable moments. That's what I remember, but you played for the guy. So when I say Fangio's practice had had a Shanahan or Kubiak-like feel, what does that make you think?
Well, I mean, I think for me, that is a that's a really good sign. And so I think when you end up being in team situations, man, you got to fly around. You got to try to simulate as close to game speed as possible. Oftentimes, I said about Shanahan's kind of practices is we were going so fast in practice that the game seemed slow. Even though we didn't have pads on, we were like flying around. And I think that was important. But I think the big thing about what you're talking about and what I sense is the time to develop and become become really focused on the individual aspect of getting better as a football player. So individual periods are important. And to work with efficiency in those periods, but I think it's John Wooden. It's practice doesn't make perfect. Perfect practice makes perfect. Is you got to have a pace in those, but you got to have a pace that you can maintain excellent technique. And a lot of times in today's world in football, and this is what I see a lot of, is I see a lot of, and, you know, I travel around to these Friday practices and things that I do in my, you know, with my work with Fox. But one of the things I see is a lack of development, a lack of understanding. You can see it on film all the time when guys don't really understand, you know, on the offensive side of the ball, what the defense is trying to do. And so I think individual and developing players is exceptionally important. And it's not a lot of times what you see is you see kind of, and I hate this, you see walk through because we've got so much stuff in.
Right.
Right. Okay. Let's walk through this play. You take, and everybody's just walking through. You take this step. It's not like that doesn't help as a player. That doesn't help your technique. So I'm a believer in the keep it simple, stupid kind of process. I'm a believer in paring down what you're doing and making sure you do it exceptionally well. And I'm a big believer in individual time. You know, that time where you really work on techniques and then being able to take those techniques that you work on in individual and apply them to the speed of practice when you're 11 on 11 or you're in one of those drills where it's, you know, where it's serious. So I think that, to me, is a part of this newfangled NFL where we're going to run a lot of stuff, guys, and we're going to be deceptive and we're going to be, you know, it's all the RPO game and it's all this. And I'm just like, you know, the teams that do it well have fullbacks, you know, they run the ball. Like the Rams were one of the best running teams in football all season long. And they had a bunch of eye candy. And I've talked to Sean McVay about this, man. We're eye candy. We're motion. We're jet sweep. We're all this. But really all we want to do is run 18, 19 handoff and 14, 15 handoff and cram it down your throat. That's really all we want to do.
Right.
And that's what they did. And, you know, I think if they have a healthy Todd Gurley, I think they thought Todd Gurley was healthy going into the Super Bowl. And then they realized he fumbled the, you know, interception off his hands and he wasn't right. And then it just derailed them from making the proper adjustments. So they were panic stricken. But I think the thing that I hear from you is the importance of individual and doing things the right way. And that to me is something that, you know, probably has been missing the last few years.
Well, individuality is something that whenever you talk to someone that covered the Bears, they just rave about Vic Fangio. And I say, well, why? They said, well, because he cares for every guy as an individual, but he will coach them individually.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that we saw. And that may sound, I don't know, like obvious to people out there, but that's not what you get with every. I remember McDaniels. McDaniels just run you through drills. Never really say anything, to yell at guys and just keep running through drills.
Mm-hmm.
Fangio will go to you individually and tell you what you need to do. Azani will do that. I saw him coaching up your guy, Brendan Langley.
Mm-hmm.
You know, telling him what he did good, what he did bad. Like, there's a lot of individual coaching. Just one day, I know, but that's what it looked like yesterday.
Yeah, and every guy has something different. You know, there's things that come natural, you know, very naturally to you as a player. And then there are things that are completely unnatural. And that you have to learn, you know, you have to learn to do, whether it's stance stuff or footwork stuff or how you step. And all those things matter. I mean, like the difference, like oftentimes, like target points in a block, your steps, the way you go through that, the difference between, you know, taking a 4-inch kind of almost replacement step, but gaining 4 inches of turf versus taking a drop step is the difference between blocking a guy in a 15-yard run and a -2 in the backfield. Just because the difference is 6 inches. You know, I mean, it makes a huge difference. And my belief is you have to constantly drill that to the point where, you know, when you say in your mind, I need to take a 6-inch step here and here are my landing spots, that your body's going to do that. And as easy as that sounds, it's not easy. And it has to be constantly worked on. And there's so many things, just the way you strike guys, your hand placement, all that stuff. Like, those to me are the important aspects of this game that, frankly, a lot of us have lost, or a lot of teams have lost, because of the way that new collective bargaining agreement doesn't allow you to do a lot of things.
And I absolutely love how Vic Fangio is being himself out there. Like, he's not pretending to be a head coach.
Right.
He is the head coach. He's being himself. And that could work out very well for this Denver Broncos team. Join us 1 week from today on our Fan War Room Draft Special. Be the fourth caller now, 303-713-1043, to win a pair of VIP tickets. That's 1 week from today, our Fan War Room Draft Special. Again, fourth caller now, 303-713-1043, to win a pair of VIP tickets. And, All right, Broncos, one day down. Let's keep this thing up. And Fangio, he was saying he would talk smack if he was on the defensive side. And he does gravitate towards the defense.
Sure. Here's the thing that I've always said about being a head coach. You know, and so many people have gotten to the point where, oh, it's all about the young guy, and we got to get a young guy, and somebody can communicate with players and all that stuff. You can communicate. I don't care how old you are. If you can communicate, you'll communicate. Right? I mean, like, Wade Phillips doesn't have any problem communicating his message to his players.
Right.
So, to me, authenticity is the most important thing. And when you have age and you have experience and you've been there and done that and you don't care about impressing John Elway, you don't care. Like, players pick up on that authenticity. And one of the biggest problems with Josh McDaniels is he came in here and he's trying to be Bill Belichick.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same thing. You know, I talked to players from Detroit who talked about Matt Patricia. Like, oh, he's Bill Belichick wannabe. And even maybe it's not fair, but the perception becomes the reality. And so for Vic Fangio, like, walking around in sweats and just coaching, that's who Vic Fangio is. Good.
Good. I do miss Vance Joseph saying dumb things at press conferences. So.
We're back.
Yeah.
Like that. You beat
back.
Arizona, bro. Like, let's kind of get ahead of ourselves there. Joe Flacco.
You have to play better football.
Yes, you did. Joe Flacco says he doesn't care if the Broncos take a quarterback at 10. Do you believe him? We'll discuss next in Four Down Territory.
Is Four Down Territory.
Madden is on the field. He wants to know if it's real. They said yes. Get your big butt out of here.
We're on to Cincinnati.
I'm here so I won't get fined.
You want to lose? I throw, you catch. It's not that hard, okay? All right, get the out of here.
On Sports Radio 104.3, The Fan. First down.
I don't really care about whether they take a quarterback or not, whether it's 10 or whatnot. The only thing I care about is, like I said, I want this team to be as good as they can with me at quarterback. So if they feel like, if we feel like as a team, as an organization, we can add value to our team with a 10th pick, well, then I'm all for getting a guy that can add value to the team with me as the understood quarterback. But hey, it is what it is, man.
The understood quarterback.
I am the man.
What is it? Was that a little
understand that
kind of little warning? Like, hey, you take a quarterback at 10. I'm the understood guy. You're the quarterback, but I'm the understood quarterback.
Yeah, I'm the guy that's going to be playing. You can watch me work, and it is interesting. Like, I think there's a different scenario here. Like, you look at the Giants, and you figure the Giants are at some point going to get a quarterback in this draft, right? And I don't think it's going to be at 6, but I think they're going to manipulate the draft. They've got a pick at 17, but I think they'll get somebody. you know, predict they'll move up to 10 with the Broncos and swap those picks. But that's a different deal. Like, you're drafting that guy, and Eli is, you know, he's not making, like, he knows what the role is. Your role is to mentor the young guy.
Mm-hmm.
Joe Flacco is like, the young guy can watch and learn from me, but my job here is to win and to be the starting quarterback. It's not to, you know, groom a guy to take my spot.
Right.
There's a completely different kind of tone there. And Joe will be the utmost professional. You know, he'll go about his business. He'll be professional to the kid, and he'll help the kid out. But it's not like, let me take you under my wing. It's not like Josh McCown who's going to, you know, coach you up along the way. He's worried about, you know, he's worried about doing his thing.
I just like that phrase, understood quarterback. He's the understood. It's like, right. Mike Evans is the understood host.
Right.
But I am filling in today.
Yes.
For Mike Evans.
Right.
Okay.
Ooh, yeah. Yeah.
All right. Next on four down territory.
Second down. I like everybody to watch them by themselves, form their own opinions, not be influenced by others' opinions, especially if I say something in a group setting that might influence their opinion. And, I don't want to influence their opinion at that stage. I want their honest opinion. And we'll all come together at the end and form a Denver Broncos opinion.
There's Vic Fangio talking about how he evaluates players. Just how involved is he going to be in this draft?
Oh, I think you've already seen how involved he's been with the two corners they signed. Like, I think there's our three corners they signed them because they also
Bosby
took the, yeah,
from AAF.
So, I just think that he's going to be incredible. I think he's going to, you know, have his finger in the drink, stirring it, so to speak. And, you know, you can't, like, I always look at a guy that's got that kind of, like, that kind of pedigree and what he's been able to accomplish as a football player or as a football coach and knows kind of what he wants, what he's looking for. And that influence, I think, is tremendous. And you know, I mean, I love the fact that he's saying, hey, man, I don't want you to be influenced by my opinion. I want your legitimate opinion. And we'll come up with a group, you know, opinion on a guy, but I love that aspect of it because I believe there's got to be some give and take and there's got to be some, you know, heated arguments over players.
Right.
And I think the organizations that have that kind of structure in place are the ones that historically draft better than everybody else.
There is a lot of CYA in the scouting community where guys won't really have an opinion because they don't want to get fired. You know John Schneider.
Right.
Oh, Seahawks GM.
Yeah.
He welcomes discourse. He welcomes mm-hmm. disagreement. He welcomes guys with different opinions. I don't know if you could always say that about John Elway. And now Vic Fangio's in there going, well, I got my opinions.
Right. I want to hear yours. And at some point, we're going to come to a consensus. But I think I think it's incredibly important to have those varying opinions and to be able to, you know, to be able to kind of sit down and have those heated arguments because I think sometimes it opens your eyes. I think sometimes you can get clouded as an evaluator because you like a guy's athleticism so much. And then you're saying, hey, listen, man, I know you like the athleticism, but the guy, you know, can't get it done on a grease board, or the guy can't get it done, you know, in the film room, or the guy, whatever. I think that's important. That's an important part to really drafting well.
Next in four down territory.
Third down.
Keenum dials up the deep ball, and it's caught for a touchdown. Demaryius Thomas.
Demaryius Thomas, now a member of the New England Patriots. Good move or bad move for New England?
I think it's a great move for New England because it doesn't cost them anything. Demaryius is still a really good receiver. You know, is he an elite number one anymore? No. But come on. That's not how New England runs their offense. You know, it's not run through wide receivers. It's run through, you know, Tom Brady. It's run through personnel packages. It's run through, you know, Wes Welker, Julian Edelman on the inside. So he could be a very valuable piece, a very valuable asset to Tom Brady and that offense. And if he's not, if he doesn't come back from the Achilles, if he's just not what he once was, you know, they'll put him on PUP. They'll see if he can be that 6 weeks into the season. They're always still kind of coaching people up in the first few weeks of the season. They always start 2-2, you know, end up 12-4. But, you know, if after 6 weeks they don't feel like he can be effective, they'll just cut him. But I think it's a great move. I'm happy that Demaryius gets an opportunity. with that organization, and that he gets the opportunity to continue his career.
And wouldn't you think he'd be fired up playing with Tom Brady? I mean, I watched Demaryius Thomas on the first day of minicamp with Peyton Manning get yelled at for running the wrong route. He didn't do that much after that.
Right.
So he has to be energized now playing with another Hall of Fame quarterback.
And you're at a point in your career where you just want an opportunity to win. You've made a lot of money. You've been a number one for a long time. Now you're just a piece to the puzzle. You're not kind of the piece to the puzzle. I think that part will be really beneficial to Demaryius Thomas. I just think it's a really good move by the Patriots. And I know that Demaryius is the one guy that everybody here in Denver loves to hate. You know, they do. But Demaryius has been, you know, a Ring of Famer here. He's a great player and a really good dude. So I'm excited for him.
Next in four down territory.
Fourth down.
Devin White, linebacker, LSU. I'm a wrestling, like, the way I get you down is the way I get you down.
Sacked. And who else? The defense pounces.
And I want to be the best linebacker ever.
Devin White, he's ready for it.
Devin White, a wrestler. Wrestler? Wrestler? What do you say there?
Wrestler.
Wrestler. The way he gets you down is the way he gets you down. He's a tackling machine. He's fast. He's physical. And Daniel Jeremiah from NFL.com has him as the Broncos pick at 10.
If that were to happen, that would be tremendous. Now, I don't think he's going to slip to 10. So I think if you're going to get him, you're going to have to find a way to move up to like 5 to get that guy with Tampa. So right. I just don't believe that that's going to happen. If it were to happen, that would be tremendous, but I don't think it will happen. So, but he's a great player. You know, it's funny you talk about the wrestling aspect of it. I'm talking to Luke Kuechly, who is one of the best linebackers in all of football, and he talked about the importance of a linebacker being able to make open field tackles, and he goes, and you know, the way it's changed, like when you first got in the league, you're trying to blow guys up, you know, you're trying to make big hits and big sticks and stuff.
Right.
He goes, now it's just about grabbing a guy and slinging him down. Like, I don't want to be able to tackle a guy, not let him get, you know, yards after catch type of thing. But, you know, you're rolling up there and you're just kind of grabbing and flinging guys. It's not like drop your shoulder and drive through a dude, you know, and now it's grab him with your hands and be strong enough with your hands and athletic enough to have to yank that guy down. It's not the big hits anymore. Like, that's how things have changed.
It's the Seattle role, too.
Yeah,
like
exactly.
They teach that now, and even high school football, like, just grab them and roll. That's the Seahawks role. Everyone's teaching tackling right now.
Yeah. No, it 100% is, and it's totally changed the way guys make open field tackles.
All right, Devin White at 10. Pipe dream, to be sure, but, we'll see. Draft coming up in 1 week. 1 week from today, I'll be flying out to Nashville. Draft, of course, is a week from Thursday. That's a wrap for Four Down Territory. We do it every morning right here at 7:30 on Schlereth and Evans. I'm Cecil Lammy sitting in. And does anyone have an idea of what the Broncos are going to do at 10? Troy Rank might. We talk to him next.
You're listening to Schlereth and Evans on Sports Radio 104.3, The Fan.
Can you believe that we are almost a week away from the 2019 NFL draft stink and nobody really has a good idea what the Broncos will do at 10?
Yeah, it's interesting to me, too, because every year I say, hey, this year is going to be the year I don't cram. This year is going to be the year that I take it, you know, bit by bit, and that I really kind of, you know, dig into it, maybe March, early March, and just roll right into the, and then, of course, you know, now I'm starting to kind of scour through tape and try to figure out who's
who. You can't help yourself.
I know, but I always think I'm going to start early, and I never do, and then, you know, then it's like, then I'm cramming for an exam, you
know? Did you do that in college? Were you a cram guy? Were you just like, hey, I'll get to it?
No, I've always been, from a football perspective, I've always been a real preparation guy, so I spent my time prepping. The draft is just different for me because I always felt like this goes back to my career at ESPN. I was like, why? Like, I'm not a college football expert. I'm an NFL expert, guys. And now all of a sudden, you've got all these college football analysts that they all played professional football, and wouldn't they be the guys that you should probably bring into the draft to say, hey, man, this guy's got a great opportunity to transition, as opposed to asking me, who I've done nothing but watch NFL film for the last 6 months, and now all of a sudden I've got to be a college football expert when I've watched three quarters of it. You know, I just, it never made sense to me. So it was only my own personal protest that I never really told anybody about.
Well, we're going to find out what the Broncos do at 10, or if they move back. That's coming up next week. But who has an idea? Who's always prepared? Troy Rank, our Denver 7 Broncos insider, joins us now. He's brought to you by Tranny Law. If you or someone you know been charged with a DUI, call for a free consultation, 303-333-1816, or online, TRANILaw.com. Troy, it is remarkable. We're a week away from the draft, basically. And nobody really has a good feel at 10. Do you?
Yeah, I don't, because the defense, as you know, defense dominates the top half of this draft. And that's not really what the Broncos need. I mean, they need to caffeinate their offense. But do you take an offensive player at 10, knowing maybe the value isn't there at 10? So, and they have a multiple of needs. You know, they have just so many needs that could they go Ed Oliver? Could they go T.J. Hockenson? Could they go tackle? And if Dwayne Haskins is sitting there at 10, I think it creates pause, you know, the way they go, maybe we take our guy for the future here, because they go 8-8 next year. It's going to be hard to move up and get one of those top quarterbacks. You're going to have to give up, what, a second, a third, maybe a first the following year to move up. So a lot to think about, a lot of options, but I agree. This year, more than years past, it's a little more close to the vest in terms of where they're going to go in the first round.
So one of the things that I've been speculating about is listening to some people I know, listening to John Mara, who owns the Giants, and then talking to some people and knowing Dave Gettleman pretty well. I really feel like six, the Giants are going to go after a really good player. Like, there's some really good players on the board at six, difference makers, and then try to work themselves back up. And I've speculated that 10 is a position where they could trade 17 to the Broncos for 10. And, and the Broncos could gain more picks because they do have, you know, a bunch of holes to fill. And that the Giants could get their quarterback then at 10 and a really good player at 6. So have you heard anything about that? This is just me speculating. But does that seem like a likely scenario at all to you, Troy?
Well, it's certainly possible with the Giants at 17 and the Redskins at 15 that those are teams that need a quarterback, at least on paper. You know, I mean, you look at it, they don't have a long-term solution at quarterback, either one of those teams. So, and I think that's where the Broncos did right by interviewing these quarterbacks and making it known they're interested in that they could take one, because then you make that 10th pick more valuable. If someone's sitting there, like you said, the Giants take a non-quarterback at 6 and want to move up, They might be scared Denver's going to take one, especially Haskins, if he's still on the board there. So, yeah, that's certainly a scenario. It gets into the danger zone when you get out of the top 15, when you start predicting success, guys that are just complete blue-chip guys. Once you start to see some of those, once you start getting out of that range, the risk goes up. I mean, you have to really manage the risk. Like, yeah, you're adding picks, but if you miss on your first rounder, does it really matter that you added another pick? So, I mean, it's a balancing game here, but they have multiple needs. And once you decide you don't need the quarterback, you have a lot of leverage in this draft, at least with a couple of teams. So, yeah, that's definitely a scenario that's on the table and one that the Broncos would consider. We saw them nearly do it last year with Buffalo until Chubb fell into their lap.
Troy Rank, our Denver 7 Broncos insider, joining the show, Schlereth and Evans. And, well, T.J. Hockenson at 10. Joe Flacco's always had pretty good tight ends, always had a pretty good relationship with his tight ends. I don't necessarily think that production comes from guys like Jeff Hireman, Jake Butt, who we all love, but who knows if he's ever healthy. And, man, did Troy Fumagalli look small yesterday out at minicamp. But is Hockenson perhaps the real kind of cutting through a little bit of the haze here? Is Hockenson maybe the realest option, the best option at 10?
I wouldn't say best, because if Devin White's on the board for me, that's clear where I would go.
I don't think Devin White will be there, brother. I don't think there's any way in hell Devin White's there at 10, but that's just
me. The only way he's there is if Ed Oliver goes up. Then he had Daniel Jeremiah's mock having Ed Oliver going 3 to the Jets, so it kind of really moved the draft around. But, yeah, I don't think White will be there, but if White's there at 10, I'm taking him before I take Hockenson. Hockenson might be the safest pick in the first round. And, there, you know, predictability is a big thing in the NFL, that know you're going to get a guy that's going to come in and play and be good. Is he going to be an all-pro? Well, I don't know, but he's going to be good. He's going to be healthy. That has real value in the first round. But is he, you know, what is the upside? Is it a reach? I was talking with Andrew Mason yesterday about this. Like, the idea of tight end at 10, for me, still feels like a reach, but when you look at how the position is being used in the NFL right now, currently, with Ertz and with Kelce and even Ebron last year, you could argue if that player is who you think he is, that 10's not a reach, that the position has evolved to the point where you could say, you know, yeah, there is value there. For me, that's a stretch. I would still rather get Hockenson or Fent later in the first round than at 10. But in terms of safest pick, Cecil, you could argue that would be the safest, most obvious pick for the Broncos if you were sitting there, because they clearly need a long-term solution at that position.
Yeah, and when you look at what San Francisco's done at the tight end position, you look at George Kittle, who's a third rounder, and what he's, you know, evolved into, and Rich Scangarello, the offense they want to run. I mean, obviously a matchup tight end, a guy who can be multiple, a guy who can be motion in line, outside the numbers, in the slot. That's an important aspect to that offense, and that's exactly what, you know, T.J. Hockenson would bring. I want to switch over to baseball right now. Sustainability, three in a row. Great starting pitching from Marquez, his outing, Sensatella's outing. Last night, John Gray, although he did give up another homer, which is just, it's crazy. What is this? How many games in a row is this that the guy's given up a home run? Just a,
I think it's 16.
Something like that, right? It's just kind of a crazy statistic. But sustainability, if the Rockies kind of, you know, have the ship that was listing, is it kind of settled in the water now? Are they okay?
Well, it's settled because they're pitching. I mean, when anyone asks me, like, when they're hitting well, they're going to be fine. Well, hitting comes and goes. I mean, you just don't, it's very difficult to sustain monstrous hitting in the major league season. And the one secret is, hey, if we're not playing well, just pitch, keep the score. Like they learned with Marquez, if you want to win, the other team doesn't score. That was one of the best pitching performances in Rockies history in terms of one hitter and the efficiency of it. Sensatella goes out there and he's showing a slider that we didn't see as consistently last year, and a heavy, heavy fastball that's dropping out of the zone. And then Gray, again, he's pitched pretty well. He's had an inning here or there. He still battles. But again, I've said this with Gray. If he's your third starter and he gives you 180 to 200 innings, that works. He's not your ace anymore. So that would work. But is this sustainable in terms of staying on a streak? It is if you pitch. And now you get to go back to your two guys. You get to go Freeland coming back around. And then you got Marquez coming back around. So they're going to have to make a tough decision. Anderson apparently is coming back to the rotation, which I would not. I would be – if he comes back, he's literally on a referendum from start to start now. Because I think they're 3-13 in his last 16 starts. I mean, they cannot win when he's on the mound right now. So the leash would be short on him when he comes back. But they're crawling back in. And the best thing besides pitching is Nolan Tott. Three straight games with home runs. He looks like he's finally exhaled. And when he hits home runs like this, guys, he hits them in bunches. So that's a good sign as well. But they got to, again, I said it, tie a knot and hold on this first month until you can get Murphy and McMahon and Dahl back. And then I would say, Mark, you are okay. But get close to .500 when those guys are coming back.
Yeah, no question about it. Troy, man, you're the best. We really appreciate you, buddy.
You got it. Take care, guys.
All right, there we have him. Troy Rank, our Denver 7 Broncos and Rockies insider, brought to you by Tranny Law. Have you or someone you know been charged with a DUI? Call for a free consultation. It's 303-333-1816 or online at TRANILaw.com. Tight end, I think, could emerge as that pick if they stay at 10. I think they trade down, but if they stay at 10, that could be. And anytime I hear someone suggest, you don't take a tight end in the top 10 because of Kellen Winslow Jr. and Eric Ebron and Vernon Davis. Those are the three.
Right.
I think, that's someone that's behind the times because that's not where the game is now. The game is middle of the field.
Yeah. I always look at that, Cecil, like that is short-sighted. And that is, well, this is...
Don't take a guard at 5.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Well, this is what we do. And like, there's no bigger, to me, no bigger difference maker in last year's draft than what Quentin Nelson did for the Indianapolis Colts.
Right.
He brought an attitude. He brought a nastiness. I mean, he's got the greatest nickname in all. And it is a two-nickname, but it's just, it overcomes all that. That's, you know, they call him Earl Grey.
Earl Grey.
Right. Because he's constantly, you know, scraping his nethers across your face mask after he flashbacks you. That's what they call him in the building.
Earl Grey.
Earl Grey.
But see, that's a more nuanced. Blue Arrow, because we were talking about Jamal Murray, like, Blue Arrow just sounds ridiculous. Right?
Blue Arrow sounds like a natural gas company.
Earl Grey.
To me. Right?
Did you, honey, did you play the Blue Arrow bill this month?
Right, exactly. Like, hey, man, we got to have Blue Arrow come over to the house. I think we got a gas leak. That's what it's, the Blue Arrow just is, that's a horrible nickname.
Call up your local Blue Arrow representative.
Right, the Blue Arrow.
Right, but Earl Grey is more nuanced because it makes you go, huh? And then when you figure it out, you're like,
right.
Oh.
Yes, yeah.
Blue Arrow is just like, what?
Yeah. I like the one, I personally, the you know, Earl Grey is just, it's rich. Like, that is great. But I do like just the Joker. Or Strap Harris. Like, just the...
But did he give himself that nickname?
Well, but he, like...
You can't give yourself your own nickname.
No, you can't, but he is... I don't know how that nickname came, but it's a one-name nickname. It is...
It's for his championship belt. Chris Harris Jr. wears the strap, wears the championship belt. That's why he's Strap Harris. But yeah. If he nicknamed himself, like, I love CHJ, I don't think he can do that, though.
Yeah, there's only been a few. A handful of guys in the history of nicknames that can nickname themselves.
Like who?
Well, Shaq.
Well,
right. He's the big Aristotle.
He's whatever.
The big cactus. He's the big right. Whatever he is.
Right. Like,
Shaq can get away with that. Strap Harris. That just sounds cool to me. Like, I like that.
Shaq should have said, "Hey, Kobe, how's my Earl Grey taste?"
Yes.
His right. tea.
Yeah.
That would have been better than what he said. But, okay, maybe Dion, right? Prime.
Prime. Prime time. Yeah, Dion. There's a few guys that you just kind of, you know, tip your cap to them.
Right.
I'm not a Blue Arrow. The Blue Arrow. I just heard them keep saying that last night. It was almost like it made me feel like Monday Night Football when the guy, the crew on Monday Night kept saying, Showtime! With Patrick Mahomes. And just
Showtime!
Like, right. It made me hate Patrick Mahomes. I'm like, I should only hate Patrick Mahomes like sports hate him because he plays for Kansas City, but right. I shouldn't dislike Patrick Mahomes.
No, not at all.
He's a great kid, you know?
Great player.
Right. And they just kept calling him Showtime. It just made me feel like I want to punch him in the face.
That was testatory, right?
Yeah, testatory.
They kept saying Showtime.
Showtime.
It's forced. You can't.
Showtime.
And they did force it too, a nickname.
They did it too with Janoris Jenkins. Jackrabbit. You remember that on a Monday Night game? Jackrabbit. You see Jackrabbit. They kept going. And I'm like, okay, guys, calm down.
Right.
You need to relax.
Right. No. If they need a nickname, we'll know.
That's why when they kept throwing out the Blue Arrow, they weren't saying the Blue Arrow when he was missing shots right and left. 0-for-8 to start the game.
Right. Had 3 points entering the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
Finished with 24. So, Murray, keep it up. Blue Arrow, not so sure about that one.
Yeah, I just am not. Poison Arrow, ABC. Nice.
Not their only hit.
No, Look of Love.
Look of Love and Poison. They're only two hits, but.
Well, you know. They're good, though. They're good. You can't ever go wrong with some good old-fashioned ABC kind of, 80s tunes.